Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham, both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. Communication is an art form at the best of times. And now that we're limited to mostly online comms through messaging and video calls, what we say to one another and how we choose to say it becomes even more important. The potential for misunderstandings leading to frosty exchanges and bad feelings goes through the roof when we remove the all-important subtlety of tone, body language, and facial cues. And so it's not just what we say and how we say it that matters. It's also how we choose to read other people's communications. Are we shaking a good dose of generosity on top of our interpretation of other people's messages, or do we quickly jump to negative conclusions that lead to bad feelings? All this in today's podcast.
I'm Mark Bentham.
And I'm Graham Nichols.
And my name is Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Welcome back to this week's episode. We're going to be talking about communication, particularly during a time of lockdown. So we've probably done a nice little bit of alliteration for this title, COVID communication, something like that. It's hard work, isn't it? Let's not pretend. Graham wanted to start off by saying, oh, I hate it. I really don't like it. He's going to moan a lot, he said in this podcast. But it is harder, isn't it? It's harder to talk to people, Graham.
Yeah. I'm planning to moan most of this podcast if I can.
Good. I'm looking forward to that.
I think it just at a sensory level, let alone anything else, I think we love the ability to do lots of video conferencing and video broadcasting. But at a kind of sensory level, when you're having conversations like we're having, there's just more effort to be made. You know, you've got stuff to be aware of, but you're looking at people, like I'm looking at you two guys, and it's not the same as being able to just casually see you in the room. You're kind of in our peripheral vision. You've got a rough idea what you're doing, and you can kind of look over when something of interest, whenever you say something of interest, I might bother to look over. But the rest of the time, I'm not having to process very hard, audibly. You know, even though it sounds like I'm hearing you guys perfectly, the actual sound wave will be greatly reduced to what I'd be hearing if I was in the room. So my brain's doing a bit more work. Everyone's brain is doing a bit more work just to hear. And so there's all that effort being made. You know, someone pointed out, if you have a gallery of six people on a screen in front of you, this is just not representative of life. No one's brain normally has to process sort of six people simultaneously and deciding which one should be centre and which one's in their peripheral, you know, vision. So what you do in practice, you're scanning all six images, who's speaking next, what's the people who are doing that are listening, and all that kind of thing. And so, yeah, it's just harder work. And then, because of all of that, regardless of the fact you might be a little bit more tired, that's not really the big thing. The big thing is more, does that mean the quality of communication and relationship decreases? That's more we want to think about.
And part of the reason why we're talking about it is that because, you know, 6 weeks into lockdown now, 6 weeks into, well, 7th week really, of kind of doing these meetings, and people are feeling the strain just of kind of being locked in, they're feeling the strain of having to keep doing these things. And as believers, how do we begin to respond? Do we begin to grumble? Do we begin to kind of just become a little bit more irritable, a little bit less patient, you know, lacking in kindness? So I think we're just recognizing that there are some issues that are beginning to surface. It's going to reveal our hearts, as we think about the last podcast, but it's also just recognizing that there are some things that you just can't do by, you know, video links and all the rest of it. So Graham's in a meeting this week with other church leaders, and we're all recognizing that actually having meetings as leaders is harder, especially when you're trying to thrash things through. It's much harder to do that via a video link because you can't read all the nuances. You're not picking up the sense of the emotion in the room. You're not being able to get that feel. And it kind of just feels distant in terms of, you know, you're kind of iron sharpening iron. It's harder to do via the video links than it is kind of when you're in a room together.
And I think if you then reduce it down to non-video, there's always a lot of WhatsApp and email and texting going on, but probably a bit more now in this time. And when you're giving someone a word of comfort, it's pretty successful. So, you know, you send someone a verse of scripture or a, you know, video that you found encouraging or whatever, or you just say, I'm praying for you. That's probably not difficult. If you send someone a question about their behaviour, just a very slight one, or an opinion about the lockdown, then the potential for that to get out of control is just more. Yeah. You're not going to see them. You haven't got the ongoing relationship to sort of deal with it. And so I think, yeah, those things can explode much quicker. Now, you know, in God's goodness, we haven't got a lot of those going on, but the potential for them to get out of control is that much greater. You know, I know that within my own family, you can with a group of people that you're basically all right with, they may say different, but you're basically all right with, you raise a question of behaviour or something, and it can very quickly get out of control, and you have to kind of, you have to deal with it one-to-one or something. So let alone, you know, across churches and across slightly less knowledgeable relationships.
And I think that's, you know, and lots of these kind of big texting group things are involve numerous people. So it's not even just a one-on-one text. You may be writing something and 30, 40 other people are seeing it. And the way you intended it is suddenly now misheard or misread by 38 other people who now feel, but you never had that intention. Yes. But just because of the way you read it, understand it, challenge, whatever, has potential. And of course, because you're not seeing them, you're not there forever to kind of, you're not seeing their response, you're not able to clarify, work out. Then on top of all this, layered into all of this, is the fact that when they're not regularly seeing each other. So the normal way things are is you may have a communication with someone, but then you'll catch up with them in community group, in your small group that Tuesday night, or you'll see them on a Sunday at church and you're able to just kind of touch in. Whereas that's not happening. So therefore you're kind of, the relationships are kind of slightly more distant at the moment, literally, and kind of in reality. So all of these things therefore mean that how we communicate becomes even more important at this time, and we need to be far more charitable.
Yeah, I think one thing that seems clear is like that these video chats and like remote communications are quite effective for like sort of transactional communication where you're sharing a piece of information or you need to explain something or ask a question, like that kind of transactional thing. But they're not so good at relational communication like that, and that's why it's difficult to replace like having someone over for dinner on Zoom. You just can't really do that. You can give a lecture and you can ask a question to somebody, but it's much, much harder to have that social time. So I think you're absolutely right. Everything just becomes transactional, like sharing and swapping information, and it's really difficult to replace the social element of church life in this current format.
And I think it's all the little things, you know, we're not, Graham and I are renowned for not being huggers, but, you know, even the handshakes or just anything that you see, all of those relational dynamics are now removed and become that much harder. And I mean, there's always, I remember a mentor of mine saying years ago, you know, never send criticism by email, you know, never send negatives by that. So now you're kind of getting much more of this because people are just kind of trying to do business, and we've kind of lulled ourselves into thinking it's all the same, and we stop thinking actually that it is different and therefore is read differently in impact. So I don't think there's an intention to offend or harm, but I think we've just kind of lowered our guards to think, oh well, you know, this is just how we're communicating at the moment, and we're kind of assuming that it's the same as when we weren't in lockdown, or on what we can say and how we can say it.
Yeah, go ahead, Graham.
I was just going to say, positively, I think it is all redeemable, though. So although we'd rather be face-to-face, I think you have to lay out all the problems to think, okay, so, you know, what could I do better? So, you know, before lockdown, there were issues with these kind of things, and they're a bit more heightened. But even then, you look at email, so we'll think about some of the other things in a minute, but if you look at email before lockdown or after lockdown, it'll still be the same issue, that there's the potential to not communicate tone. So you don't say, I'll give up on writing emails. You say, I need to work at this, so I need to think, are there things that I shouldn't email, full stop, topics I just can't get into? Or, if I'm going to get into them, how can I pad them in such a way that makes sure there's no misunderstanding, that makes sure I'm communicating love and I'm qualifying it to recognise I could be wrong. So what you might say in a one-to-one, well, I'm not sure I believe, you know, I agree to that, you probably wouldn't write it in an email, like, as simple as that. I don't really agree with you. but you could get away with that in a conversation because there's lots of comeback and so forth. So I mean, that was an example of stuff that's not particularly to do with lockdown, but they're all redeemable. You just got to work hard at it, I think.
Now, conversely, on the positives of communication in lockdown, I think people have upped their games in lots of ways. So people are phoning one another a bit more, checking in with one another, phoning to say, hey, look, I prayed for you this morning, you're part of the church list, just thought I'd check in, see how you're doing. So people are talking to people that they don't normally do in any other way, or are relating. So I know some of our younger folks are calling some of our older folks, and probably during normal life, they wouldn't be having those conversations. So, you know, praise God, this lockdown has brought about different communications, which has caused people to slow down, which is actually maybe developing communication relationships. But we're kind of, I guess, raising the ordinary life of just thinking, okay, we need to just be a little bit thoughtful about how we do that at this time. So seeing the positives and the encouragements.
Yeah. So you sort of like, I think we've touched on two ideas already about how to approach communication during this time. One was kind of, Mark, you just mentioned being very charitable. Perhaps you could unpack that a little bit. And the other one, Graham sort of highlighted about being as clear as possible to minimise misunderstanding that could occur because of lack of body language and tone and all those things that are missing. Do you want to unpack the sort of the charitable thing, or maybe go into other sort of principles that might be helpful for ordinary Christians who are trying to reach out to people, trying to carry on with life during this time?
Yeah, no, I think the whole idea of charitable is you're looking for the good. So as I'm in any email or WhatsApp or message or Zoom, if something is misheard or you know that sense you hear something and it stings ever so slightly, you just think, oh, that was a bit, oh, I didn't like that. I think in those kind of moments, I think we need to heighten our charity. Now, in truth, we should be doing this outside of lockdown anyway.
Yeah.
But I think between brothers and sisters in Christ is we look for the good and we're kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt. In other words, that came across a little bit grumpy. That came across a little bit irritable. That came across a little bit, you know, angrily. Let me give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they just didn't mean it that way. Maybe that wasn't quite what they were intending. Let's look for the good. Oh, actually, they were trying to encourage me, but it didn't kind of work. Or they were trying to challenge me. Or they were trying to prick my conscience to get me to act in a way that, you know, seems like a good way. In other words, rather than kind of putting them down or kind of thinking, oh, I can't believe they said that, I think they're outrageous, rather think, how can I be a little bit more, how can I be more generous in spirit towards them in kind of interpreting what they said and understood, which then leads me to see not kind of come back with immediate either similar kind of tone or kind of fight something that's not there, but actually just to clarify or to seek to understand what they're trying to get at, or to even say to them, did you, that came across a little bit grumpy, but were you meaning to be? Oh, no, not at all. I was da-da-da-da. You know, and I think it's just slowing that down and being charitable in it. And that will then kind of feed into what Graham's going to say now about clarity and kind of clarifying things and communicating.
Yeah, I think just to add to what you're saying as well about the receiving end of communication, that just as we were talking about in the last podcast about our own hearts, thinking about why are we reacting like that? So there's the kind of reality of, yes, it was a bit harsh, you know, what they said. It's always worth questioning as well, not just being charitable about their motives, but questioning our own motives in our response. Yeah. You know, are they really threatening me? Does it really matter that much? Am I making a bit of a thing of nothing here because, you know, my pride's been hurt or my authority's been questioned? So am I attaching it to the wrong thing? Or are they genuinely denying truth? Are they spoiling the cause of the gospel? Are they creating division? You know, the answers to those questions might be yes. Still, we've got to be charitable about it, but but also the answers might be no. No, they're not doing any of those things. They're just slightly threatening me. So I think that on the receiving end. Sorry, did you want to say something?
Well, I just want to say, and because we focused on the receiving, but I want to be charitable as I write out.
Yes.
So
yes.
So kind of just, I think we just got to spend a bit more time kind of, it's what we kind of often call the padding language. You know, yeah. Just trying to add those kind of warmer comments, those warmer phrases. You know, how are you? What are you doing? Or, just not, you know, I understand. You know, just trying to explain a little bit more what we're trying to do, rather than kind of just think people understand us with just kind of shorter, sharper sentence. And I think it's that sense of just being a bit more charitable in how we speak, assuming, so even as I write something, assuming the best in that person of why they're doing it, particularly if I'm challenging something, particularly if I'm kind of trying to help them to see something differently, to kind of being charitable in how I view what they are doing and allow for that in how I communicate it as I write or as I speak.
That was what I would have said. So yeah, all those things. I think for people like me who are quite terse in emails, quite short in emails.
Are you?
Oh, absolutely. It works when they're transactional, like Josh was saying, to do with meetings. But I think when it's something controversial, I do actually, they probably still seem very short, but for me, I write very long emails for anything controversial. And I'm sure I don't do it perfectly, but I do try and put across a sense that I'm valuing the person. I do try and anything that's questioning perhaps someone else, to put it more tentatively than as a definite opinion. So you might say, it seems to me as if, but I might be wrong, but it seems to me as if, blah, blah, blah. Which is just—it's just humility. It's not a technique. It's just actually expressing what you want to express. Which is, I might be wrong, but you might not always say it. You were finding that amusing, Joel, for some reason.
That's Josh, but Joel's
Josh.
Not here.
No, indeed. No, I was just to Joel once before. It's because I talked to Joel quite a lot. But
yeah, anyway. No, me and Joel get confused with each other all the time. I was just trying to remember times where you had said that to me in a text or in a email. Trying to think if you'd ever said that, and then that I now can interpret that to mean that actually you think I'm wrong, but you're just being charitable.
You've worked out the signals now.
I've worked out your secret messages. Yeah.
Messages. I don't think I'll bother with the padding with you anymore. I'll just say.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
I think there's that. But sorry, when it comes to videos, like we're talking about more. I think you haven't quite got the time in video conference calls to do all that thought. So you do a bit of pre-thought. So you think, is there something controversial coming up that I might normally discuss in a meeting? You might think, oh, I think I'll discuss that one-to-one beforehand, by phone maybe, with the least stress. So you do a bit of that. But also in the meeting itself, you make a bit more effort to hear people.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you shouldn't make an effort generally, but you make a bit more effort and to weigh things a bit more slowly and carefully, and just try and think about the impact of what you're saying in those discussions. And sometimes just kind of let things go and say, I'll have to hold this until we can meet in person, and sort of weighing those things up.
And in one sense, you know, allowing things to wait is also teaching us, isn't it, that actually, you know, God is sovereign. He's in control, and maybe just actually we're having to learn patience as well. There are things that I want to do, but I realise I can't. So actually, it's helped me to learn patience and trust in God's purposes. And you know, so even this little communication, how we do that, is kind of teaching us about how we relate to the Lord and His in that. But it's also what Stanley McGraham says. You know, just letting things go. I think we've got to be quicker to just cover over and bear with one another. You know, Paul talks a lot about bearing with one another. And I think this is one of those circles we've really got to start to bear with and just cover. You know, so people are going to say things just not perfectly. We never do. None of us ever communicate perfectly. But in this kind of, when we're feeling a little bit maybe wearied and strained and tired, we've just got to keep praying for the Spirit's help to bear with, to cover over sin rather than seek revenge or, you know, stir it into something that it's not necessarily has to be.
I think another technique which we're using now, I think, which you, when you're in a live meeting, physical meeting, you can interrupt each other more. I'm not saying it's always right to interrupt, but it's a bit more free-flowing. And so you can interrupt, you can kind of figure out as you interrupt, had they finished? Because sometimes all of us sort of run down in conversation. So we are, we're sort of going, we've basically finished what we're saying and we're quite happy for someone to interrupt. Sometimes we're absolutely in the middle, we're just about to get to the big argument. So, you know, it's frustrating. You can gauge that a bit better when you're in front of someone. When you're in a video call of some sort, then you kind of have to watch and wait till someone's finished. And there's a kind of slightly different protocol, but I think it actually helps them feel listened to. And you also have to look out for those who wouldn't talk in a physical meeting much, will probably not talk at all in a Zoom type meeting. So you've got to kind of watch out for them and think of ways of drawing them in by asking them questions and making sure they're heard and that they're not talked over by, you know, the person who often, you know, has stuff, good stuff often, but, you know, often has stuff to say. Just hold them back. So I don't know if you've experienced that, Mark, with your community groups or other things.
Yeah, I think in particularly in small groups, I encourage our guys to have the video on, because I think actually if you're in a small group setting and the video's not on, it's really hard. Because it just feels like there's a voice that, you know, are you connected, are you not connected? You know, it's all helps with that, right? Because even now you're trying to pick up the signals and the clues of, you know, do they look a little bit disinterested? Is something else going on? Or are they a bit bored? Are they, you know, we can still pick those things up. So I would encourage folks to engage and have videos on and all of that stuff.
It's also knowing when
encouraging.
Yeah, it's also knowing when, I just interrupted you then.
Yeah, that's right.
Knowing when someone's about to speak. So if they haven't got a video and you can't quite see that they're leaning forward ready to speak, you know, it's harder in a video meeting, but it's impossible if they've got a black screen. Having said that, I did a Christianity Explored course recently with someone who, for the first week, because he was unwell, was black screen the whole time and muted. But he came back the next week, so yeah, there are those funny exceptions.
How'd you know he came back? Maybe different members of his family are doing different things in the midst, because you actually don't know.
Well,
maybe you never saw him.
True.
You know, maybe, you know, who knows?
I've got the concept. No, I shall never know. But
exactly.
He said it was him.
Maybe it was someone like Boris Johnson, and you don't actually know who it was now until you see him.
This is all true. I think I think to do with communication as well, the crisis, I think we talked about it maybe a few weeks ago when we were looking at the crisis in general. It does put a number of strains on us, because we are a little bit more sensitive, a little bit more lacking in lots of social interaction, probably in danger of being either self-justifying our behaviour or judging other people's behaviour. I think it brings out all those things, and they can come out in our communication, can't they? I think we touched on it last time, but I think it continues through this period where I know in myself I can get a bit too judgmental.
And I think it's got worse now. I think because the strain is coming, uncertainty is upping, all of those kind of things are now much more within, which means my guards are lower, so therefore I'm quicker to respond negatively or not helpfully. In different ways, really.
Patience is running out with the process, isn't it? I think, certainly. What do you think about... Actually, I think we could probably do a whole podcast on also communication within families. So I won't ask you a question about that now, but I reckon we should do that, guys, because I've heard all kinds of sort of horror stories about when this finishes, there's going to be a massive spike in kind of divorces, and there's already people searching for that on a massive scale because of the intensity of relationships and things. I think that's worth talking about, so we should do that. But just to finish off this conversation, what do you think the church can do? Is there any kind of internal discussion about how we're going to continue with this? Because it does seem like, as we were talking about, I think maybe last time or this time, I can't remember, that church is going to be one of those things that is going to be last on the list to be allowed, just because of the scale of it in terms of the number of people. I guess we can hope that community groups and things like that might kick off earlier than actual big church meetings. But are you guys kind of thinking through, okay, like how can we be more... How can we do more? How can we be more effective with our communication with the congregations? What can church be doing to make these experiences worthwhile.
Yep. We're doing a podcast on it to help people think it through that Perfect. Much more. That's one way. I mean, we're trying to keep building in other ways of relating. So last week we started another way in which people could have virtual coffee after Sunday service.
Yep.
You know, so just trying to keep encouraging those things, keep encouraging people to talk, to phone one another, to care for one another. I mean, I think we will have to start thinking about, you know, will we be able to gather as a 200 plus congregation in the next, you know, but what happens if they allow 50? You know, does that therefore mean we start to rotate community groups to come in and yet have, or do we do multiple services for a while? So I think there are things that we'll have to think about which may allow us to do church differently, not how we would want it. All those things are on the options. And of course, at the moment, it's just a waiting game. But I think whilst we do, we just got to keep encouraging. You know, we're thankful that we have Zoom and phones, you know, and all these things are good things. But just guarding our hearts and applying biblical principles. Keep thinking about, you know, how we're being kind and humble and compassionate and, you know, Colossians 3 kind of language.
Yeah, I think that one thing about the kind of coffee thing is a good example of trying to put back the relational communication in as opposed to just having transactional. So I've heard in sort of business, in the business world, we're doing lots of virtual classrooms and things in the business world. And one of the things we're hearing is that some people are having sort of what they're calling like lunch and learns. So instead of just having meetings over Zoom and things like that, they're having lunch over it as well. So there's no agenda, there's no actual meeting, there's nothing particular they're talking through, but they're just being together, and it's a more dedicated social time, which I think is that coffee thing is an example of, which I think is valuable, because that's what we're losing, isn't it? We're losing the relational, the intimacy of relationship.
Yeah, and I think it's not negative, this is just a learning, that having been on one of those recently, I think we're so used to meetings being transactional, as you said, or at least functional, so have a purpose. So actually, when you gather half a dozen people together for one of these after-church coffee things, there is a feeling at first, and I can feel it in myself really, that you're thinking, okay, so what's the point of this meeting, how long is it going to go on for, and you know, how do we bring it to an end? And so I think we're trying to learn as well as teach, I guess, an informality about that.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the same pressure. I mean, you might because you want to get away, but you don't have quite the same pressure after a church meeting physically. You're not kind of thinking, you know, what's the agenda for this discussion?
Yeah.
Who's leading it? You know, that sort of thing. What's the purpose? You just talk, don't you?
Yeah.
So we're encouraging that, but it is a bit of a learning. But yeah, I'm with Mark in that we closed very quickly because we wanted to be good neighbours and follow the law. And I think we will open very quickly when the law changes and as soon as it is safe to do so and all that kind of language that the government uses. But, you know, as soon as there's liberty, I think we'd want to use the liberty.
Yeah,
that's best. I mean, we are encouraging people doing, you know, people are doing quizzes, community groups, small groups. Yeah. We had a quiz afternoon. Which is just a bit of fun, really, a bit of a laugh using technology in that way. They're kind of just, again, it's this, you know, we had an elders quiz night, which I badly lost, me and Roz, embarrassingly so.
You were last, I believe.
Okay, thanks. Tough. Yeah. But it was fun. You know, it was kind of using technology for a bit of fun, and it just kind of helps with relationships.
Yeah.
Just keeps doing that. So we want to keep encouraging those kind of things as well.
Yeah, and lots of, like you said, there's lots of extra communications have happened, and we want to encourage lots more of that as well. People phoning each other, video calling each other, and encouraging each other. Thinking of something useful to say as well. Yeah, somebody phoned me up this week and said, yeah, how can I pray for you? Somebody that wouldn't generally phone me up in life, in the church life, and it was great.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Ordinary. Lockdown might be a good time to introduce somebody new to the podcast, perhaps somebody who has a little more time on their hands than they usually would. Also, don't forget to leave a review and a rating, and come back next week for another brand new episode of Ordinary.